Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Have you ever wanted to learn a new language? Maybe you were inspired by a recent international trip, became obsessed with a foreign film or TV show, wanted to communicate better with a loved one, or just felt like developing a new skill. With Rosetta Stone, learning a new language is easier than you thought. Rosetta Stone has been a trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including Spanish, French, Japanese, Dutch, and more. Learning is immersive and designed for long-term retention, so you fully learn to speak, listen, and even think in that language. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Hey, everybody, it's Dynamite Show. Paul Fontaine, Jeff Hawkins, here on the Fight Game Media YouTube channel on X.
Are you sure? Are you okay over there?
Okay. I was just looking, and the first comment we got, somebody's here for Chris's Novembrino. So I guess
he's my co-host on Shake the Roots. Yes, it's a joke.
I thought maybe he's I was on the wrong show. But thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And if you're listening on the Fight Game Media free audio feed again tomorrow, thank you for supporting the site. And please put up with those wonderful commercials because it helps keep the thing going. So, Jeff, normally we'll chat about like AEW news a little bit before we get into the show. And there wasn't a whole heck of a lot going on this week in off-camera in AEW. But there was a WWE news item that pertains or could potentially pertain to AEW. And that would be this. Now, what's the WWE ID?
Yes.
Okay. So explain this for the people, because I think I understand it, but do you want me to explain it?
No, in sports terms, basically, NXT is now going to be AAA. Okay. And WWE is putting some money into a lot of training schools into certain indie talents out there while they get their feet wet, while they go out there and there. But the thing that interested me is that one of the schools on this list is the Nightmare Factory.
Yes. Yeah. And the way I saw that described was there's like a 50-50 dividing line in the middle of the Nightmare Factory. And half the people are earmarked for AEW and half of them are earmarked for WWE. And
that,
it's kind of a working agreement.
I can't stand.
Probably not. No. No.
When you have QT and Dustin working for AEW and it's Cody's kind of seed money doing the school, one of those things like I'm looking at this and going, why didn't AEW lock that down?
What, when Cody was still there?
Well, anytime. Because when he left, they should have locked that down.
QT and Dustin are trainers, right? There.
Right. But like a lot of the not so seasoned talent go there to train, especially because of its proximity to Jacksonville when that was a thing, but it's not a thing anymore. But, you know, a lot of the talent still lives down in that area. But I know like Red Velvet still.
Oh, does
pops
she?
In there. Okay. I believe she did. I think that's where she did a rehab. I think Jay did. I'm not sure of others, but it's one of those things where I'm just like, people were saying that, well, this is not unfair, but it's going to kill the indies. And I was like, you know, it's not like the indies are some thriving business model for people and stuff. The more money they can get in there, the better. It's to me, It's a good thing. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, they're going to get preferential treatment to, of course, legends that are running schools because it's like, it's Booker T's school. It's Rikishi's school. it's
Seth Rollins,
Cody's school, and it's Seth Rollins' school.
Yeah. Lisa Gifford had our friend, you know, she's been on the show. She had a tweet. Yeah, kind of blew up. She said, WWE did this in the UK, came in, gobbled up as many indies as they could, tried to decimate the indie scene, then left. WWE does not care about indie independent wrestling. WWE cares about WWE. This is not altruistic. Okay, I 100% agree with that last statement, and I think even WWE would agree with that last statement. They're not doing this for the indies. No, they're doing this for themselves.
I don't understand that thinking. To be honest with you, I get that, you know, it's like, it's not like independent wrestling is like the way of the future or something like that. It's
small the breeding shows. Ground for tomorrow's stars.
It's a breeding ground, but it's not a moneymaker. Something that people run at a loss usually. And if money can get infused into it, there's nothing wrong with that. I get, the evil corporation has first shot at the great talent instead of your favorite company or whatever. I'm just
You know what I'll compare this to? She compared it to NXT UK, and that's fine. And I can understand from her perspective because she was heavily involved in that scene, and a lot of people lost their jobs and a lot of people lost their companies. I would look at this more like what UFC is doing.
Okay, well, hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on. Before we go into what you see UFC is doing, a lot of people got jobs. Because of NXT UK, and a lot of people are working in the two major companies because they had exposure on NXT UK.
True. Okay. Yeah. Fair
enough. Yeah. A roster, and most of those people are still working if they want to still be working.
And the indie scene seems to be doing okay over there. You got Progress. You got Red Crow. You got But
it evolves. It's like anything else. It's like you take out this crew and another crew will eventually show up if it's needed or whatever. It's not it's not a static thing.
So in the other, you know, WWE's partner or you know whatever you want to call it, sister company in TKO UFC, they have done something similar with the regional MMA promotions. Like LFA, there's a BFL, I think it's called in Canada that Jason Hagelm, who
does stuff
with Fight Game Media, he does play by play for them. There's probably about somewhere between eight and ten different regional promotions that air their fights on UFC Fight Pass. I assume they get money from UFC for that. And then UFC just basically goes in and plucks out their best fighters and brings them into the company to go on Dana White's Contender Series and fight for jobs. And those companies, this has been going on for a long time. I think Dana White's Contender Series has been going on like 7 or 8 years. And those companies, I mean, none of them are ever going to be like, you know, the number two company in the world or anything like that, but they're all making money. They're all doing well. And they're all, you know, like viable.
And the Dana White Contender Series gets them some viability for like shows at like a hotel ballroom or a casino or whatever. Yes.
Well, yeah, he's also got his Dana White's looking for a fight series that he does where he goes to these regional shows, scouts talent. And then, you know, and they get exposure that way too. So they sell tickets, they develop fighters, they get known as, hey, you know, we're the company that brought up Sean O'Malley. So, you know, if you come here, you're going to see the next Sean O'Malley at some point. And that's what these indies will do too. If a company has a deal with WWE, then, you know, the idea is you're going to see the next wave of WWE superstars before they get signed.
Well, you can say like AEW and WWE decimated the American indies and there's no longer an Evolve and there's no longer really a PWG to speak of or anything like that. But we now have GCW, we have Defy, we have, you know,
Wrestling Revolver.
It doesn't kill things. Okay. That which is not dead cannot truly die. You know, it's one of those things where it's like wrestling will come back to be indies and things will grow again. I understand. This is more they have a teach to test type of thing that people really don't like about WWE. I'm ignoring that comment. And it's one of those things where I just find it. I understand that people like had an emotional connection to Progress.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's one of those things where it's like do we not want them to eventually make money? You know, the guys that are working there, do we just want them to be, do we not want the bands playing on Tuesday night, $5 night?
Well, at I think
hit record and then to go off and do their thing.
I think what they want is they want Progress to keep running and using the guys that AEW uses too.
Yeah. So what they want is they want Progress to AEW, not Progress to WWE.
Correct. But and AEW is kind of doing the same thing. They're just not as blatant about it. Like they're going in and they're signing whoever they want out of Progress and New Japan and Stardom and Stardom.
They just made a New Japan. What are we talking about?
And Stardom. Like anytime you listen to Scotty Wrestling on the what's his show called, the 5-star podcast here on the Fight Game Media.
Yes. Yeah.
So he talks about whenever a Stardom wrestler is coming up and making a name for themselves, it's like the countdown starts. okay, who's gonna snap her up? Is it gonna be
everybody
WWE
starts and then you start getting that nervous, I hope Vince and company don't get a hold of it. It's like Vince isn't there anymore, but you know what I mean. It's like I hope WWE doesn't get them and water down their offense or whatever. Meanwhile, you know, they're jumping off turnbuckles through tables and doing barbed wire for 50 people in a
I don't think they care, you know, about that. I think they just don't want them to go to WWE because they don't watch WWE.
Because they don't like the company. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're okay with them going to AEW because they watch AEW. So, exactly. John has a good point here. He agrees with me. So that's his good point. Okay. Well, no. but at the same time, this is too much like corporate greed trying not to grow a suitable independent scene. Okay. It is in WWE's best interests for the independent scene to keep going. That said, as Lisa put it, they're not altruistic. They're not doing this for the independent scene. They're doing this for WWE. But it gives their potential talents a place to wrestle that's not WWE. So they learn different styles. They work with different people. There's a lot of experienced wrestlers on the indie scene that, you know, former AEW, WWE, WCW wrestlers that are wrestling, and WWE can have their prospects wrestle against those people and get better, and you know, and then they can come into NXT for some fine tuning before they go onto the main roster.
Greed is not an instinct that can be controlled. You need to go into a system that can be mutually beneficial for all. That's all capitalism is for the most part. And to me, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, okay, WWE gets too big for its britches occasionally, and then something comes along and punches it in the face and gets hot or whatever and starts to contest with it, and then they have to deal with it, and they have to evolve with it. And all those are and AEW now has to do the same thing. AEW is run by a billionaire. They could have done this years ago if they wanted to.
Yeah. Now here is a good point. At the same time, Paul, they want them to wrestle like WWE style, which is not a problem, or AEW style, which is not a problem. Yeah. I mean, if they start going to these shows and telling the people how to wrestle, then I can see where fans of independent wrestling might really get upset, because now you're just basically watching minor league WWE wrestling. And that's not what those fans buy tickets to go see. They go to see, you know, hardcore wrestling, you know, whatever it is that they go see.
I agree with this comment. It's what AEW should have done from the start. If they are going to be the company of the people and the company of the super indies and whatnot, they need to they'd be pulling guys from shows. AEW would be low level people would be wanting to work indie so they could improve, and then Tony would pull them from shows because, hey, we need everybody in town for this Friday night Rampage taping. Yes.
Tony, I said this 3 years ago. Tony should cut the Matt Farmer and whoever else runs Defy Wrestling a check for $500,000 a year, put some money into their thing, send them wrestlers for every show, and use it as a developmental, you know, like, and
Defy, GCW, all of those. They should have. They shouldn't have burned bridges.
GCW is different.
It lets people kind of ebb and flow, and it's a nice Maple Leaf Pro would be a good one to do. But Maple Leaf Pro uses known people from other companies, type of thing.
It's so not really get a place your own people on there.
Okay, you know, I can go with that too. Yeah,
and then you bring in locals. you know, and that's how they develop their talent, right? You have locals working with the guys you bring in from AEW.
Black Label Pro was sitting right there that they could have done something with. And Black Label Pro always puts on quality shows.
Impact was doing that for a while with Wrestling Revolver.
Yes.
AEW could do it with OVW. They've brought in from OVW, they've brought in Layla Gray, they've brought in the Outrunners, they brought in Beef. You know, and there's other people down there that are way better than those.
And there's a couple of West Coast promotions for those guys too.
All if they pro wanted to wrestling. Come out here. Yeah. So, you know, like there's no reason why AEW can't do this, and everyone can be thriving, and you can have these independent shows with a mix of local talent mixed in with people that you see on TV every week.
And people that could be improving too. That's the other thing is that I mean, we'll get into that a bit with Private Party, who have been on this roster for 5 years and are still Private Party.
Yeah, well, they took a step tonight.
I guess.
So let's get into this show, because I want to say before we get started, there was a point in this show where I was thinking this is like the best AEW show I've ever seen. And then it kind of fell apart.
My takeaway was a lot happened, but I wasn't sure if they knew what the important point was.
Well, yeah.
You know, there are three or four big beats on this show. That are all kind of competing for the narrative, and it's very weird to me.
Their announcers need some coaching, because
this announcing was bad tonight.
You can't have Matt Menard out there with a live mic without somebody in his ear telling him what he should and shouldn't say.
Matt Menard is not an A show color commentary guy, and I hate to say that because I like Matt Menard, but it's also he doesn't know his role. Is he supposed to be a heel or a baby face here?
Well, there's that,
and also play it straight down the middle. I don't think he knew.
And is it his job to try to get over angles, or is he just there to play off of the straight guys? And it seems like he's trying to get over angles, but the problem is he doesn't know what the angles are.
So right. It's almost like he's watching it live and hoping that his genuine reaction will help get it over. And I don't think that's a smart way to go necessarily.
He's like Art Donovan, in a way.
No.
He's better than Art Donovan, but I'm talking about his reactions. Yeah, his reactions are like the reactions of a fan as opposed to the reactions of someone that works for the company.
There you go. As opposed to how much do you think he weighs? I mean, I lived through Art Donovan. Don't ever bring up Art Donovan.
He made a comment when the ending thing was going, you know, spoiler alert, when the ending thing was going and you had Lashley and Benjamin, two guys, right? And MVP, three guys beating down one guy. We've seen this for weeks with Moxley's, with the Death Riders. And they, and then we had security just swarmed the ring. They've never come in to stop the Death Riders, but they were all over it for this crew. And Matt Menard with a live mic says, "Where's Moxley's crew?" You know,
Menard. There's trying to push the story Menard, and there's Menard who's trying to get the joke in like Taz.
I don't even think it was that. I think he was just not thinking.
No, not on this one.
Don't want to put that into the fans' heads, because the ones that are really paying attention are probably thinking that, and the ones that are just there to watch a show are just probably enjoying the angle. You know what I mean?
I don't need the Heenan Monsoon.
No, dynamic.
where it's just the color guy's gonna be, you know, over the top heel. I don't need that. I'm fine with serious color commentary guy, but it's one of those things where it's like you have to know your shots. And I think you're on to something. He doesn't know his shots here.
No. And Tony is a fan. And then Excalibur is basically having to carry the load, and
Tony's the voice of the fan. Tony's fine. Yeah. Tony's playing David Crockett the entire time, where it's just but he still knows what's going on.
They need someone to carry the color part of this, because Excalibur's job, he's doing the play-by-play and the color. And the problem is like, so he's doing what Corey Graves was doing for a while when he always had, like, you know, when they put him in with Jimmy Smith or, you know, like these color commentators that didn't know what they were doing, Adnan Virk. And then he's having to do two jobs. And that's kind of what Excalibur's having to do right now, because he doesn't have a color guy. And as bad as
But Excalibur's used to doing that from PWG shows too. So it's one of those things where that's his strength. So,
but PWG doesn't have 18 angles going on in every match.
I agree.
Yeah.
They barely have one angle.
So this show from Cleveland, I believe, or suburban Cleveland, I'm not sure.
It's Cleveland, you're correct.
3,439 tickets. So that's a decent crowd for what Dynamite's been doing lately. That was up from September 23 when they had Collision there and they did 3,181. So basically the same, although last time it was Collision. So
well, the Guardians were in a playoff chase on September 30th and now they're sitting at home. So
yeah, and and well, September of last year.
Oh, okay, my fault.
Yeah, yeah. And no, no. And also there was a big basketball game. Like Cleveland was hosting LA and Bron and Bronny were playing. So that's pretty big in Cleveland because obviously that's where LeBron's from. So we got this cool video package to open the show, which went over all the matches. This is kind of like what they do on the NXT theme specials. I mean, it was pretty much exactly what that is, but a little less funny and a little more like just kind of almost promoting it like a movie. I thought it was really good. And then they had a video promo from the Death Riders, which kind of interrupted that. And then Orange Cassidy with a mic, and we didn't realize it was Orange at first. He basically cut off the Death Riders video with Mike, and he made his way to the ring. And they had advertised that, you know, they did this big angle on Collision. Did you see it or did you hear about it? Where they showed it was basically highlights of last week's Dynamite at the end of the show after the cameras went off the air. And Orange Cassidy was just, it was a different Orange Cassidy. He was yelling at everyone. He was mad. And he said, next week on Dynamite, I'm going to address Jon Moxley. So that's what we got here. And we got Orange Cassidy. So he comes out, he says, turn it off, like at the video for Death Riders. And fans are chanting Freshly Squeezed. And he says, that's enough of that. I don't do this. I don't like this. It's not who I am. I don't come out here and tell you I'm a leader for 10 minutes. I'm no leader. That's not who I am. Last week, when I slid into the ring and watched my best friend Chuck Taylor get his neck crushed by a steel chair, I looked around and I was surrounded by the people that I shouldn't have been. I was thinking like, it was a bunch of losers. And he says, I admire their courage. They're all very talented, but they're very, very young. Really? John Silver, Alex Reynolds, Evil Inner. I was surrounded by the future of AEW. And they have no idea of the danger that they are in. They have no idea how dangerous Jon Moxley is. And he pauses and you hear, because the crowd, it's not a very big crowd and they're not very loud. And one guy screams out, fuck these fools. At the main camera. I laughed. So I know right then and there what I needed to do. If Jon Moxley has his way, there is no future AEW. They have no place to go. Jon Moxley doesn't need AEW. He never did. I need AEW. I don't exist without AEW. There's no me. There's no us. There isn't this. And the fans are into this now and they're chanting AEW. So now I know what I need to do. And that is to stop this. I need to cut the head off the snake, make sure nobody else gets hurt. And I'm going to do it alone by myself to protect everyone. So how do I do that? Jon Moxley, I challenge you. I challenge you for the AEW World Championship. And I'll take the symbol of this company and what it represents. And I'll take it out of your bag and put it in my backpack. So you know what, John? You let me know. I'm not hard to find. I'm where I am every single week, right here in this ring, because I'm Freshly Squeezed Orange Cassidy, and I'm the next AEW World Champ, and I still don't need a catchphrase. And he drops the mic. And I thought it was a pretty good promo. I mean, there were some holes in it. It wasn't perfect, but it was a nice little mission statement.
I liked the promo.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you put it up against what it could have been, you'd be disappointed, I think. Because I don't think this was a time for an exposition promo. I think if Orange Cassidy comes out, takes off his glasses, drops an F-bomb and says, I'm going to break your damn neck and take your title, and then leaves, everybody's just like, whoa, taken aback, okay. As opposed to doing the ironic promo. This was a time to break out of the Orange Cassidy character, and they only did a half measure of it. And that I think is my issue with this, is that if we're going to make taking Chuck Taylor out an emotional leverage point of this story, then Orange Cassidy has to drop the I don't care disaffectedness a bit. And what they did was they did a half measure of, oh, I care, but I still don't have a catchphrase. You know, it was you knew what they were doing because they didn't want to change the Orange Cassidy character. But to me, a 1 month change before going back wouldn't have been the worst thing in the world.
They kind of tried to half-ass it here, like with a change, yes, but still keeping the majority of what is.
We're going to make him more aggressive as opposed to sloth-like, but we're not going to go all the way with it.
He's still Orange Cassidy.
He's still Orange Cassidy. And I understand that thinking. It was just one of those things where I'm watching this and go, okay, this is fine. This is good. But it doesn't move me, you know. Felt like pro wrestling promo 101 to me.
Compared to who they took out later on in the show, Chuck Taylor might as well have been Bryan Danielson.
Well,
So Excalibur, after this is all done, he says, "We didn't expect to start like this," even though they advertised it. So Mercedes and Camille are walking in the hallway and they're stopped by Renee. She asks Mercedes if she has a prediction. Mercedes says, "Renee, you know better. First things first, Cleveland, say hello to your CEO. I hate terrible questions. Just look at her. She's the brick house. I understand Chris is one of the strongest, but she doesn't hold a candle to Camille." Renee wishes her luck, and Mercedes says, "You don't need luck when you're with the CEO." Yeah, she needs something now.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
All right. And next we got Adam Cole versus Buddy Matthews. Oh my God, this match. So first time in the ring in 423 days for Adam Cole. Do you notice, was it just my TV contrast or was Adam Cole a very weird shade of orange? Him and Buddy, Buddy was tanned, but his skin looked normal. I don't know.
Buddy's usually the one with the bad fake tan type stuff.
Well, he had a tan, but Cole was orange. I don't know. It was weird. I just couldn't. That's all I could pay attention to for a while. But then. So they do this match, and basically, it's all about Adam Cole trying to sell that his ankle still hurt.
I can't believe they told this story, but go ahead.
Meanwhile, the fans, they just don't like Adam Cole. And they start chanting for Buddy. He goes for the sunrise very gingerly, and Buddy hits him with an ankle breaker, and then three times he stomps his feet on the ring steps. Crowd's going nuts for this. Michael Sampson comes out to check on him, Doc Mike Sampson. Crowd decides upon their own to do a countout, and they get all the way to 10, and they're not counting fast. They're counting in referee cadence. 1, 2. That's how fast the crowds are counting. And Bryce is telling them to stop. I think it was Bryce. He's like, no, no, no. And they get to 10. And I think I even heard them go ding, ding, ding. And meanwhile, the doctor starts walking him to the back. And then Buddy grabs a mic and he says, "Really, Adam? When the going gets tough, you just walk away. The old Adam Cole wouldn't just walk away. This new Adam Cole is a little bitch." The fans pop for that. Cole pushes the doctor away and he limps back to the ring. And the crowd's into this now. So Buddy takes out his leg again, stomps on his ankle. And then Cole tells him to take his foot. And then he super kicks him twice, goes for the knee, but then he collapses. So Buddy hits a high knee and a stomp for 2. Crowd booed at him, kicking out. Cole threw a towel at Buddy and super kicked him. And then a thrust kick to the back. Enziguri, running knee for 2. Crowd cheered when Buddy kicked out. And they start chanting Buddy again. Went for the Panama Sunrise. Buddy kicked his head off, hit a buckle bomb and a stomp. So he's still in Seth Rollins' moveset. Adam kicks out at 1, and the crowd boos. The one count is a guaranteed cheer from any crowd, anywhere, anytime, and they booed this one. Then they cut to MJF watching in a scene that was clearly taped at the same time that he did his promo a couple weeks ago.
Okay, good.
And he's just watching, and it was just so out of place. And then Cole finally hit the Panama Sunrise. Buddy rolled out of the ring.
What would have been better is they have the TV on. He's just cleaning the house or whatever, kind of occasionally looking over.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just has it on as background noise.
Better yet, he's watching the World Series.
Yeah. New York, he should be watching this.
Yeah, he probably was. Buddy rolled out of the ring, and then Adam Cole hit him with another Sunrise, although Excalibur first called it a Canadian Destroyer, and then he corrected himself because it's the exact same move. He rolled him back in the ring, hit him with the boom, and got the win. And the fans kind of booed. And then they cut to Kyle O'Reilly watching on a screen, and he's that was my Kyle O'Reilly impersonation.
That was fantastic.
Yeah, and then Cole grabs a mic, and he says, "Cut it!" And the crowd boos. Buddy, I know what you did, and I appreciate it. You just reminded me of who the hell the real Adam Cole is. And for that, buddy, I thank you. And he put out his hand. Buddy shook it. Fans cheered. Lights went out. They come back on. And Buddy Matthews has been replaced by Malachi Black. And he's holding his hand. And the crowd chants, "Holy shit." And then Cole limped away, rolled out of the ring. Doctor helped him to the back. And Buddy was clapping for him as Malachi just stood on him. What'd you think?
I think that this is where AEW's mixed messages comes to bite them quite a bit. I don't think these people want to see a Adam Cole is unsure of himself again story with the ankle. I don't think if they know whether or not they're supposed to cheer or boo the House of Black, because we have we have them beating up enhancement talent 1 week to get pops, but then we've had them feuding with every other heel or every other babyface under the sun, and we have him calling out quote unquote babyface Adam Cole. I am so done with the Ring of Honor crap in this company. You taught me a valuable lesson about applying myself and my low self-esteem. We don't want that out of professional wrestlers. Okay, if you're going to do an underdog story, it has to be a long one and then eventually pay off. We can't do the 1 week. Adam Cole's unsure of himself and his ankle and is now going to... It's such a beta move to me. It's a beta story, and that's why people aren't cheering it. We don't do that to watch stories that we can relate to necessarily. You know, I mean, one story we can relate to is fine. This one, I just, it's so... And then Malachi Black comes out, and he should have probably just kicked off Buddy Murphy's head for failing. That's what we would usually expect from him in this. But instead, it's just Murphy standing there, and Black's shaking his hand. We're going to get, you know, the standard Adam Cole Black match, which is going to be fine. But
yeah, and the fans are going to cheer for Malachi Black. I'll guarantee it. Yeah.
Yes, because they want to see the House of Black pushed. And they want to see them be a top act in this company. And they've never quite gotten there. They've always kind of been on that B-plus level because everybody thinks that half of them want to jump over to WWE.
I want to highlight Jason's comment here because this reminds me of something. And I'll tell you why in a second. So Jason says, Cole looked weirdly orange, and he also looked like a normal, in-shape guy on the street compared to Buddy. Now, I'm going to be on the... Fight Game podcast tomorrow with Garrett Gonzalez on the Wrestling Observer Radio. And we watched Halloween Havoc 89 on this. And that show was from Philadelphia.
Yes.
And there were times when I was watching that show, like I was seeing similarities between 1989 WCW and 2024 AEW. And when I talk about this, a normal in-shape guy on the street compared to Buddy, it's not quite that. But when you had, for instance, Brian Pillman, babyface, Flying Brian, sorry, not Brian Pillman. His name is Flying Brian. He's
Flying Brian.
Yeah. And he goes out there to face Lex Luger.
Yes.
Who's the heel. The fans were 100% behind Lex Luger.
Yes.
And they were booing Brian Pillman because compared to Lex Luger, Flying Brian was Adam Cole here. Compared to Adam Cole, Flying Brian is Hulk Hogan. But, you know, like in 1989 WCW, when you put him in there against Lex Luger, he looked like a normal sized guy. Yeah. You also had that dynamic dudes against the Freebirds.
That's the Freebirds, yes.
Yeah. You also had, what was the opener? It was whoever it was, they booed.
It was Tom Zink, wasn't it?
Tom Zink against somebody, and they booed Tom Zink, even though Tom Zink is like pretty incredible guy. But it's this boring, bland baby face that just looks like a normal dude against a charismatic person that they love. Yes. And the fan and the promotion was shoving these guys down your throat who the fans were rejecting. Meanwhile, what they actually wanted was the big jacked up superstars that looked like they were from WWE. Even though, like, you know, we're talking Road Warriors, we're talking Steiners, we're talking actually not even jacked up. They love those freaking Samoans. You know, and like I watched that six
Doom
man.
Coming out for the Steiners. Yeah. It's
Doom
it's,
and
they
Steiners.
Like, they,
yeah.
They like that kind of larger. The weird secret about wrestling is that somewhere along the lines when indie wrestling had that mid-aughts boom or early aughts boom that these guys are relatable to the fans because they're not big jacked up steroid induced blah blah blahs. I gotta tell you, the Bobby Lashley reaction at the end of the night.
Well, according to someone in our Discord who I won't call out, they thought that the crowd was mild for him. That's not what I saw.
That's not what I heard on TV. Maybe my speakers were wrong, or maybe the mic was different.
No, but, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think maybe his were. So anyways, this was I was fascinated by the match. So I can't say I didn't like it because I kind of like the fans letting the company know, hey, we like Buddy. We don't like Cole. I mean,
this was a Tuesday night black and gold special from NXT, pretty much.
Except back then,
With the story. Yeah.
Except back then, Adam Cole was over, and now it's Buddy Matthews who we want pushed. So maybe they're listening.
Adam Cole is still over. I just think it's one of those things where I think people don't want him as a babyface.
No. You're 100% right there. And I don't think he should be feuding with MJF. I think they should.
Exactly.
I thought they dropped that at Double or Nothing.
Do the same thing well at fighting each other because they both play cocky jerk well. And it's like, you don't want those two. Yeah.
And the problem is when they get in the ring, MJF is better than him. In 2024, MJF is better in the ring than him. He's better on the mic than him. And he's the heel. So I'm sorry. I'll fight you on this one.
No, I agree, but MJF's style lends itself to a main event style of wrestling, and Adam Cole works like a 2010 indie worker.
Adam Cole wrestles like he should be in the role that Buddy Matthews is in.
Yes.
Like he should be there to put over the guys that you're building up for the main
event. In a way, I think you're partially correct on that.
Yeah. Remarkable Renee was with Private Party and Chris Daniels, who I wrote looks remarkably like Paul Ellering. And he says, guys, this match tonight, Frankie and I were in the same situation 3 years ago. We had momentum. We thought there's no way we wouldn't be tag champs, but I let Frankie down. Our relationship was never the same and he's not even here anymore. So think about what you're risking tonight. And Quinn says, don't worry, CD, we got this. Zay says, history will not repeat itself. We will leave Cleveland, Ohio as your new AEW champions. And that's a flex. So. The baby faces never lie.
This was fine.
Yeah.
I would have liked it to. I would have liked Chris Daniels' words to have a little bit more effect.
I like that they reminded us of.
Yes, that was good.
But the fact that
history had no effect on these guys.
No, you're just none at all.
Nah, we got this. We're not you two old guys. We're cool.
All right. Yeah. Frankie's not here for a reason. He's no good. Except he's awesome. All right. Doctor's checking on Cole backstage and the kingdom's there, these goofballs. And Adam Cole says, before I recap this promo, I got to say, this is the promo he should have cut 2 weeks ago when he was in the ring and he tried to retcon us all. I like this promo. Okay. So he says, Buddy Matthews just gave me one of the toughest matches of my career. No doubt. Now, Malachi Black is on my radar. Says, Max, my ankle is clearly not what it used to be, and I don't blame you for that. I should hope not. I don't blame you for being a bad friend. What I blame you for is pretending that we would ever work. We were meant to be enemies, not friends, so quit kidding yourself into thinking that you wouldn't betray me. Look what you did to Wardlow, Sammy Guevara, Daniel Garcia. You needed to be taught a lesson. What we did was rough. It was a little extreme, but damn it, it needed to happen. I care about AEW. I care about the fans, what this place was built on. You've never been a part of that team and you never will be. I swear to God, with every part of my being, we will get our hands on Max at full gear. I'll be happy to teach you another lesson. One down, two to go, Max. So I like this. I like the fire. I liked the fact that he basically said, you know, like I did it to you before you're going to do it to me. Like that's what we need to hear. Not, you know, like, pretend what you saw you didn't see, and now I'm a good guy, he's a bad guy. I didn't like the fact that the goofballs are there. Like, and it would be fine if they weren't on Collision and Rampage trying to give Mortos candy and putting on a beast mask and talking in beast language. And not only that, did we forget about the part of the story where Roderick Strong is supposed to win two matches too?
Yeah,
I think we did. I think that's been wiped from history. I'm not sure, although maybe it's going
to
be. Well,
I think it was strategically forgotten here because we're supposed to think they're all on the same page. And eventually we know that the three guys behind them, I don't want them lifting knives behind Adam Cole while he's cutting the promo. Let's put it that way. I don't want it.
So you think they're turning on him?
Yes.
Okay. I'm not sure. I really do.
When it comes time, if it's Adam or Roddy, it's going to be Roddy.
Okay.
So it might not be a full turn, but at least going to be a partial one.
Well, I kind of liked my idea last week where, you know, like they were each going to win two matches and then the third one, they have to face each other. So
yeah. And then it's a draw probably. And it becomes a three way.
Cole was hanging out with his middle-aged dad friends in the trainer's room. That's courtesy of Sideswipe, Jason. Nice line there.
Yeah, they didn't give anything away with Roddy either, which I thought was a smart move. Like, Roddy didn't make a face at him when they were talking about this or something like that, where we're like, okay, there it is.
Roddy is definitely the middle-aged dad.
That mustache is terrible. He needs to shave that thing.
Bennett, I'm not sure, but Taven is your 35-year-old uncle that's never been married, and he's hanging around and he still goes out to the club.
Still goes to college parties and stuff. Yes. You know,
yeah
he offers to buy them booze if he can come in there. And you know,
he's Matthew McConaughey's character in Days and Confused. Yes. Yeah,
well, no, well, see, I won't go that far. He's not creepy.
Yeah,
no,
he's not a pedophile. Yeah,
he's like a beach bum who still surfs and plays in a band.
Not quite Steve Buscemi in Old School, but he's getting there.
But yes, he is a 30-something adolescent, is what he is.
Yeah, there you go. So Callis came out with a mic and he gave the same line he did last week. Ladies and gentlemen, Kyle Fletcher has something important to say. And he hands the mic to Kyle. And Kyle says, look, I'm a man of my word, and I'm here to call out and stand face to face with Will Ospreay. Without further ado, the man himself, the aerial assassin, Will Ospreay. And he points to the tunnel and no Will Ospreay. And he said, okay, let's try this again. I said, Will Ospreay. And he points to the tunnel. And then he said, I'm just as disappointed as all of you. I was really hoping he'd show up. This proves what I've always. And then he's interrupted by music. And I think the fans thought it might be Will, but it was the United Empire music. And out comes Mark Davis. And if you've forgotten, Mark Davis is Kyle Fletcher's partner in Aussie Open. And Kyle says, not the man I was expecting, but dude, it's great to see you. And he went to hug him. And Mark puts out his, no, listen. I wish I could look you in the eyes right now and say the same thing, but you're out here calling out Will. And you know he's not out. He's not here. He's at home because of what you did to him. You and I called him brother. I don't even know who I'm looking at right now. Kyle says, you think I've changed? The only thing that happened since you've been away is my eyes have been open to the truth. Don Callis helped me open my eyes to who he really is. He never cared about us. You can forget about Will Ospreay because he's forgotten about you, but I never did. I knew this day would come, and I made sure that when it did, you would always have a spot in this family. Mark Davis says, family, we had a united empire, and you destroyed it. And then he turns his back and walks away. And he says, Davis, before you go, there's going to come a day very soon where you need to make a hard decision. I've proven that before, that I have no problem cutting the pass loose. And Davis walks away and Kyle stared at him. So
it was a 3-week program done in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Number one, this AEW crowd doesn't remember Mark Davis.
No.
So we need to remind them. How do we remind them? We do a vignette. I'm going to show up next week to address you, Kyle Fletcher. Kyle Fletcher need to cut this promo from the ring as opposed to on top of the stage because Mark Fletcher coming out in street clothes, you know, looking like a schlub and everybody, oh, what? Who is that? You know, kind of a thing.
And in fact, you just called him Mark Fletcher. He's Mark Davis.
Like a big deal. Doesn't care. No. I don't think most people even know that they were signed as All Elite necessarily as a team. No. I don't. And it's one of those things where it's like, this is where some care in the storytelling need to be take place. It's one. Okay, I will be there next week. Kyle Fletcher comes out, calls out Mark Davis. Mark Davis gets built up for a week. So, hey, we're all excited to see him. Now we know who he is. That's his former tag team partner. Why? Because we said it on television. So he comes out, does a thing, and then cuts that promo and leaves. And then next week it'll be, hey, you know what? Maybe we need to talk about this, whatever. And then Kyle Fletcher can turn on him or whatever, or Davis can turn on whoever. But it's one of those things where it's like, we didn't need to do this all at once. We could have built this for a while.
You could have even had, you know, you air the video package, you show the highlights, maybe show some New Japan highlights of them winning tight tag titles.
Yes.
And you say next week, Mark Davis returns to AEW Dynamite to address his
partner. The actions of his former partner. Yes. Exactly.
Then you do an interview later in the show with Kyle Fletcher to ask him, Remarkable Renee backstage with Kyle. Hey, what do you think about Mark Davis coming back next week? Kyle says, I'm thrilled. My buddy's coming back. I got a spot here in the family for you.
Or he says, I wish he would have told me before he told you guys, or something like that.
Yeah,
one of the two. Either way. No, I like your way. It's just one of those things where it's like,
so you set it up.
He didn't even tell me. Yeah.
He wanted Tony, who thinks that everyone remembers everything, wanted that huge surprise. Oh my God, it's Mark Davis. You know,
to this Cleveland audience who couldn't have cared less. And I was like, okay, that I think that looks like someone who used to be Mark Davis.
Well, I know Mark Davis better than most people because I watch New Japan and I've seen a lot of their matches, and I didn't recognize him at first. Like, if they wouldn't have told me that it was Mark Davis, I wouldn't have known it was Mark Davis.
So, and doing this at the top of the stage, where it's like Mark Davis gets 5 seconds before he's already irrelevant in this promo. It just screamed thrown and slapped together for a segment.
He'll probably turn on him, and then Will make the save.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, what's the match at Full Gear? Do we know yet? So that was a I was assuming it might be Fletcher Davis. And if we're doing that, then we can take their time.
It's going to be Will and Kyle, I'm sure. They haven't announced it, but I'm sure it's going to be Will and Kyle. Remarkable Renee's was with Hangman Adam Page. And she says, at Full Gear, it's you versus Jay White. And Jay says he's offering you a chance at redemption. So Adam Page cuts a great babyface promo.
This promo was fantastic.
Yeah, great babyface promo, even though he's a heel. In July, Jay White entered the Owen, but I knocked him out in the second round. You can blame Christian, but it was me, not him, that you spent 3 months at home because of. And when you come back, you came looking for me. That was a mistake. You don't have to bring up our record. It's 4-1. I know that. You beat me. I'll give you that. You want to offer me redemption? Let me make something perfectly clear. No such thing as redemption. Not for you, not for me. There's only the now. Only wins, only losses, and the consequences that will follow. I know your strategy. You're going to go for my leg. But what's my strategy going to be? You don't know. Will I hit you with a steel chair? Will I strangle and injure your friends while you watch? Will I set your house on fire? Will I break your ankle again? At the end of Full Gear, when I beat you, I will stand over you with my hand raised and I'll leave you like so many others, hurt with less than you had before. Jay White, I will leave you behind. And he walks away. Crowd cheered. Renee just looked back at him because she's still playing off that Moxley angle from 3 years ago.
She's still playing off the Moxley angle. Yes.
Yes.
We don't follow up with Moxley on any other thing except this Hangman thing where she's creeped out by the guy. I liked the levels to this. I liked that he started with an emotion. I liked that he got quiet a little bit in this promo. I'm like, that's dangerous with an arena promo to get silent, but it worked here. Thank goodness the AEW audio crew was in on this so they could adjust the levels accordingly, as opposed to, say, the Tomohiro Ishii thing later where he's just talking in the camera. I go, what did he say?
I didn't even get it. Yeah.
I didn't get it either. But no, I liked... interesting point. Denise Salcedo talking to Will Washington. Will Washington says that the Hangman Page character is the emotional center of the AEW universe. Agree or disagree?
Maybe. I mean, if that's the case, then he might be the one that ends up taking down Mox.
Has potential. Let's put it this way. I would put that in your pocket a little bit because it's not yet. I would my answer would be not yet. it's one of those things where we're still actually doing some damage control from his title run, to be honest with you, but he is becoming a more fleshed out character, and I'm kind of enjoying it.
Yeah.
Although it's going to be at Jay White's expense, it appears, and everybody seems to like Jay White. Are you okay?
No, I'm just reading something that Ryan Satin tweeted out. He thinks that Triple H fumbled the ball by not signing the Hurt Business. We'll get to that.
Okay.
I disagree. all right. So there's been a lot of talking on this show, and we got more. So Wheeler, Pac, and Claudio are walking around backstage, and then Marina and the briefcase and Mox all followed. So the Death Riders come out through the crowd. Moxley has a mic, and this dastardly heel for the last 3 months that's been running havoc over everyone has a mic, and the fans start chanting Moxley.
Yes.
Yeah. So he says, "I don't expect Orange Cassidy to appreciate what we're trying to do right now, but one day you'll understand." Freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy comes out, and he thinks he challenged me for the AEW championship. You think you challenged me? I challenged you. When I had your friend Chuck Taylor's neck broken, what I did was cut some distraction from your life, cut the dead weight so you could focus on your goals. We walked into the room and we said, who's in charge? Everyone pointed at Orange Cassidy, but you didn't want to step up. That's not the Orange Cassidy that I know, that I think the world of. I don't want you to catch this disease. All these fat people that are too happy with their paychecks. That's not exactly what he said, but that's what
soft and fat wrestlers who are happy with their paychecks.
Yeah. I think he's talking about the Bucks, but they think there's something they're
no,
not.
No, he's talking about the guys who get $100,000 for just being all elite.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's better. I don't want that for you, Orange Cassidy. I've pushed you and you've not even begun to walk through the valley. You want me at full gear tonight? Anytime. You will not fight me on the mountaintop. You'll fight me in the valley, and you better be prepared to die. This valley is the valley I'm willing to die in. Orange Cassidy said that no one's going to get hurt. He's a real cool customer, isn't he? He thinks he's pulling the strings. Let's see about that right now. And then Pac and Marina grabbed Wheeler Yuta. Claudio put a chair around his head, acted like he was going to pilmanize him. And Orange Cassidy makes a save. And Claudio grabbed him, starts stomping on him. Marina starts yelling at Wheeler. And then Wheeler turns around and starts stomping on Orange Cassidy. So Dark Order come in to make the save. Heels cleared the ring. Pac was beating the shit out of Orange Cassidy. Mox laid out John Silver. Pac dropped Orange Cassidy, grabbed a chair, went to pilmanize his neck. And who should drop from the ceiling but Darby, like Sting in 1997. And I didn't realize this last week that this is what they were going to do. Like, they're just recreating the NWO angle with Darby as Sting. And unlike Sting, Darby got his ass kicked. And he fell over a barricade in the middle of his
cable off of his harness, you know.
Fans are chanting Darby. Darby and Claudio brawling through the crowd. More people came out. I couldn't even tell who they were. Top Flight, Leo Rush. Mox tossed Darby into the crowd. Garcia and Private Party were there. They were identified.
Dark Order's in there, yeah.
Yeah. Babyfaces laid out Wheeler in the ring. So everyone left but Wheeler, and he got his ass kicked. And then the Young Bucks music hit, and everyone thought they were going to make a save, but they just casually walked out to the ring because they're about to have their match. So Babyfaces actually took over here and brawled into the crowd. And I got to say, it may not have sounded like it from the way I described it, but I kind of really like this. Like, the Babyfaces banded together and actually did something for a change. So I kind of like that. I wasn't sure about the fake out with Wheeler. Like, that's kind of...
I hated that part. I got to be honest with you. I thought, okay, cool. Destroy Wheeler and then make him... I figured they're going to... They might put him as either a tweener or the guy or a broken guy who has to get redemption on the babyface side. And that was interesting until Orange Cassidy came out to make the save. I'm like, why are you making the save? Well, he used to be a best friend. Yeah, but he screwed up best friends.
Yeah.
He was the one who helped get
them. So we can only assume that this was a plan ahead of time. Wheeler knew that they were going to do it.
Yes.
So they also had to assume that.
And he acted perfectly, Wheeler did. For Wheeler's part, who not the most dynamic fella in the world, he did fine with the angle. It's just Orange Cassidy coming out to stop it made no sense. Let him do it.
And Darby descending from the rafters was maybe 2 months early. Would you say?
Is he just showing up to shows in case Death Riders come out so he can just drop?
I guess and, so, and, yeah. And just, oh, yeah, by the way, we didn't mention this, but Moxley trademarked Death Riders.
That's fine.
So I think that actually is the name.
Dodgers are up on the Yankees. So really? That was me fist bumping. I think it was one of those things. It became a Russo segment when the Young Bucks decided to come out, and this is the time for the tag team title. Although it was supposed to be getting heat on the Bucks for taking advantage of the chaotic situation. I didn't exactly share in that because it's like, okay, then concentrate on the match. Stop concentrating on the people walking up the stairways and stuff, chasing the people off. If we're moving on, let's move on, as opposed to drawing focus, because I'm waiting to see if something's happening over there, and that's not. It's just cutting back and forth, and it's kind of making me a little bit sick, to be honest with you.
Okay. So, yeah, Bucks are out. Private Party, conveniently enough, were the last two left in the ring when everyone else left, so we ended up with our tag team title match. And, of course, as we learned earlier, if Private Party loses, they have to split up. So they had a freaking phenomenal match. I don't know what you thought of it, but I loved it. So the beginning of the match, they did a spot where one of the Bucks got the ring bell and they tried to hit Private Party with it. And then Mark Quinn got the belt out of his hands. And then he tried to swing at the Bucks, ended up hitting Zay. And I thought that was going to lead to the finish. Like, and I think everybody did. I think that's why they did it. And Zay got busted open there. And then, you know, he played long time he played babyface in peril, you know, like where he couldn't get in up to the apron because he was on the floor bleeding and everything. Eventually finally made the hot tag. Then they did a spot where Mark Quinn got taken out, and the Bucks dragged him up to the top of the ramp and left him there. And then Okada comes out and gives him the lightest pile driver that you've ever seen. I don't even think Okada's knees touched the mat.
I don't think he was wearing knee pads, so he didn't want to touch it. And so
And he was laughing the whole time he did it. Like it was crazy. So then it was basically 2-on-1. The Bucks are just doing all their moves, and Zay keeps kicking out of everything. And you just kind of got the impression that, oh yeah, you know, he's just gonna do this heroic, you know, thing, and then he's eventually just gonna get beat. And they set it up really well because there was a couple of times they were kicked out, and then the Bucks just went back and did the same thing again, and you thought, oh, that's it. And then he would kick out. And then eventually they had missed the EVP trigger at one point where, you know, Zay collapsed, and then they went to do it again. And then they hit each other, and Zay rolled one of them up for two. Then I wrote down that, like, I literally wrote down, they hit the EVP trigger for the win. And then like, it's a kick out. And then Zay reached for a tag, but his partner wasn't there. Then Matt hit a V trigger from behind. Then he hit a one winged angel. And you thought for sure that was going to be the finish. And Mark Quinn showed up out of nowhere and made the save. And then Nick threw him out of the ring. Fans were chanting, this is awesome. They set up the TK driver, but Quinn got in the way and he necked Matt on the ropes. And then he hit a poison Rana. And then they hit the best gin and juice that they'd ever hit. And earlier in the match, the Young Bucks had hit gin and juice, and they did it better than this and better than Private Party ever has. But yeah, they hit the gin and juice here and got the win, and the fans went nuts, and they celebrated in the ring. I gave this 5 stars. I thought this was perfect. Oh, yeah. I love this match.
Five stars.
Yep. So
you're lucky we don't drug test here at Fight Game Media.
Guarantee you Dave Meltzer's giving it 5 stars. Guaranteed.
Because it's a Young Bucks match. Of course he's giving it 5 stars. I liked the match. Don't get me wrong. It was an interesting swerve to hit a guy with a ring bell. And then commentary doesn't ring the ring bell when he recovers and has to do the 2-on-1. It was driving me nuts because it's like, okay, we're going to do the swerve of taking him out with the ring bell, but really we're going to take the other guy out with a tombstone pile driver because he's the guy we've been teasing as a heel with Stokely nowhere to be found.
That should have been a clue.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But still, to me, I'm watching the match. I'm like, why isn't commentary absolutely perplexed that this guy took a ring bell to the head from his own partner and he's fighting them off 2-on-1 still? it was such an emotional vacuum for me that that part of me checked out of the match.
Okay,
honestly, fair enough. It did. Yeah, no, but overall, the match was very and also, also with the Kenny spots, it became obvious that they're going to use this to pivot to make the Bucks. I couldn't believe that. I couldn't believe the aftermath of this match.
Oh, we'll get to the aftermath.
Because it took away everything that they did for the Private Party in this match for the most part. The match itself, if you put it in a bubble, if you put it on a compilation tape or Death Valley Driver, you know, VHS with 600 matches on it or whatever, yes, it's a very, very good match.
If I had... I write down my scores when the match is over. If I waited till the show was over to put my score on this match, I'm probably talking a full star.
I would have not have. I did not think it was a perfect match, and that's where I go with 5 stars. You of course have your weird AP wrestling scale, which is actually 6 or 7 stars depending on how you're feeling.
Well, at some point during this match, I said to myself, if Private Party somehow wins this, it's 5 stars. That so at that point it was like it's a perfect match if Private Party wins. If the Bucks would have won, I would not have gone 5 stars. Doesn't matter what they did,
right?
Because I like the story, and the story here said Private Party had to win.
Yeah, I think they needed to continue to sell being woozy too. I think him being too fired up was a problem. But I did like the spot where he collapsed before the EVP trigger. I thought that was clever. Yeah. Look, the near falls were very, very clever.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for near falls too. Like right. I put it this way, okay, and this one is worse than 5 stars for this. If you want to say that's worse, I watched the Full Metal Mayhem match from Impact with the Hardys and ABC and the System.
Okay,
I gave that 4 3/4. I freaking love that match, and there was so much good stuff in there. But I went in cage match, and I was like, this is like a 3-star match.
I'm admittedly a little jaundiced because I watched for my other show. My pick is going to be the Rockers versus the Brainbusters from Madison Square Garden in January.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, like a 4.5, 4 3/4-star match. Yeah. And it's like one of those things where I'm watching that. But no, was this the best? Was this better than the time they beat the Bucks?
Oh, yeah. Early?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I was judging against because I was like going, they don't really
have back yet. But because I will say, not for 1 second until the match was over, did I actually think Private Party was going to win.
I didn't either, and that shocked me until he started doing the Kenny spots, and then I was like, maybe they're gonna let Private Party win this.
Even though the story of the match was that they needed to win, I just didn't think it was gonna happen.
Right,
I
thought it had been established that they were gonna go their separate ways, and one of them's gonna go with Stokely.
I kept coming back to like Mark Quinn's gonna turn on him, or Stokely's gonna show up, or you know, like something's gonna happen.
Well, it's weird because I'm going in the back of my head. Okay, we can no longer blame him for the bell shot because he's worked back together. Are we gonna blame him for not being there to save him from the Tombstone pile driver?
He was getting beat up, but you
know what I mean, you know, the heel story doesn't always have to be true, etc. All right, it was a very good match. Let's get to the post match so I can then bury why this win doesn't matter at all.
So the Bucks have the belts and the crowd's starting to boo because I actually think that they thought that there was some sort of a stip that they'd forgotten about and Private Party actually wasn't the champs. Like that's what I was thinking. Like the crowd was like, the way that the Bucks were acting, it was like they were still champs, but then they handed the belts to Private Party and they got a big pop and they congratulated them. And I wrote down, well, I guess this is the start of their babyface turn. And they celebrated in the crowd. By they, I mean Private Party, and the Bucks just kind of walked off and, you know, gave them their flowers, as the kids say.
No, this was terrible. Let's start here. Party should have gone out and celebrated on their own without the whole "we respect you" because all the entire point is this is Private Party's moment. This is their big win, vanquishing them. I don't need Ring of Honor's good game guys from the heels who basically buried them on the last pay-per-view saying that they haven't done crap in 5 years, Bob. This isn't because all this does is then pivot the story back to the Young Bucks and their eventual babyface tour turn. I need Private Party to have their moment as big stars, as being the guys that friggin' matter in this angle. And they escaped with the belts, been given the belts and celebrating, just have the Bucks looking forlorn or whatever for a moment. And then the private party can go in the crowd, have their moment, do the party thing without the Bucks needing to get some shine from it.
Fair enough. But I think, like, clearly they want them to be the baby face.
Yes, which clearly this is the emotional pivot to the
which makes no sense, by the way.
Exactly.
But, yeah.
Yeah, why are they nervous after this? That's what didn't make any sense to me. It's like, okay, maybe if the Death Riders come out to attack the Bucks,
we'll get to that.
Then, like, they get scared. Yeah.
I didn't understand anything that happened with the Bucks from this point forward. Breaking news, Moxley versus Orange Cassidy at Full Gear, November 23rd in Newark. So that's been made official by Tony Khan. And then we go backstage to Renee. She's with Jamie Hayter and Penelope Ford. They're going to be wrestling next week on Dynamite. At this point, the only match scheduled for going head-to-head with NXT in the ECW arena with a huge card and a bunch of returning stars. And AEW's countering with Jamie Hayter and Penelope Ford. They have promised no physicality. And Penelope says, I've been here since day one. Some of you have forgotten who I am, including you. I've done so much. I've gone through glass, barbed wire, skewers in my head. I got to admit, I'd definitely forgotten about all that.
I remembered it at that moment. I went, sure did.
After 2 years, I'm going to get what I deserve. Jamie Hayter interrupts her and says, you think I took something from you? No, you took something from me. You want to talk about something from 2 years ago? Go ahead. Next week, I'm going to mop the floor with you, girl. Hayter kind of came off like the heel here, but...
Well, there were two problems with it, because this was also the second Halloween costume of the evening. The first being Justin Roberts doing Pee-wee Herman as the announcer. This time, do you remember the comment by Mariah May about Jamie Hayter? Looking like Daphne from Scooby-Doo.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, she dressed up as Daphne?
She went full Daphne as Scooby-Doo.
Oh, I didn't even notice.
And I'm watching it going... Yeah, she came in costume to then dress down Penelope. Yeah, the problem is Penelope Ford's the heel here and Jamie Hayter's the baby face, and Penelope Ford has a point.
Yeah. And Jamie Hayter came off like a vengeful bully. Bully. Yeah, yeah.
I watched this and I went, I'm here for this match, but at the same time,
Did you watch Collision on Saturday?
I did not.
Mariah May cut the best promo she's ever cut in her career. Well, maybe that one after she turned on Tony was really good, but this might have been the second best. You got to see it. She basically just completely dismissed Anna Jay. And
I think I did see this one. Yeah, I saw that one. Yeah.
Oh, it was so good. All right. We got a tail of the tape for the main event. So I thought, oh man, are they going to the main event already? And then I was like, oh no, right. We got that woman's match. They should have just cut the woman's match.
Sam, you can reach Paul at Paul Ace Fontaine.
You know what? I'm serious. Like, if it's just to check a box, you might as well cut it. That's all I'm saying. Like, you don't need to jam a woman's match in there because people think you need to have a woman's match. Like, I'm sorry. Like, in this case, like, this show didn't need it, but whatever.
We'll have Sam as a guest next week to make up for this, for Paul insulting her like this, but okay.
I don't insult Sam. I'm insulting. I'm insulting what they did. Anyways, Shelton, they said, was only 17 pounds heavier. I don't buy that.
I don't buy that either. What are you talking about?
It was 225 pounds for Swerve and 242 pounds for Shelton is what they said. I think Shelton's closer to 250, and I think Swerve is maybe 195.
I think Shelton's closer to 260, and I think, I got Swerve around 200, 195. Yeah.
Anyways, it was a good video package. MVP says he has no doubt that Swerve Strickland will be one of the greats. MVP, you want Swerve to make a choice. Oh, no, this is Nana said MVP, you want Swerve to make a choice. He made the greatest choice of them all. He chose himself. And tonight, you find out that Swerve is the most dangerous man in AEW. So then we cut to the Learning Tree, and they're not in the ring. They're, I guess, what were they, on the apron, or were they?
No, they're on the ramp.
On the ramp. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know why I said apron. I meant, like, I thought they might have been by the barricade, but no, they're on the ramp. Yes. And Big Bill says, teamwork makes the dream work, but it will not work unless the team works together. And he is very happy with himself for that.
such a dopey thing. I loathe teamwork makes the dream work. I really do.
Hi, guys. Welcome to All Hallows Eve.
That means the night before Halloween. And he talks about his match last week. The Wrestling Observer newsletter said that this will be a cage match that will be remembered for a long, long time. Dave Meltzer gave it 4 stars. I actually gave it 4.25. He brings up Jay Briscoe again. He calls himself a 9-time world champion, fulfilling my prophecies in the Nueve, or however that's pronounced. I couldn't have done this without the Bad Apple and the Redwood and the Learning Tree branches watching at home and here tonight in Cincinnati, Cleveland. This has more to do with winning the championship for ROH. I think big picture, much like Terrifier 3 became the number one movie in America, much like AEW has become a powerhouse because of me, with all due respect to Jon Moxley, I'm going to take ROH to heights it's never been, because I can, because I'm Chris Jericho. And if you don't think I can, you're overestimating your knowledge of the TV and wrestling business. And then Brian Keith finishes it off. Well, not quite finishes it off. He says, never underestimate Chris Jericho, you dumbasses. And then he says, I'm going to take ROH and all of you to places you've never been before. Thanks, guys. And my conclusion from all this is Tony Khan got a TV deal for Ring of Honor. And he's given Chris Jericho the credit. I could be wrong.
Thanks. I think you're wrong. But okay. You know how many stars I gave that letter match?
You don't give stars.
Exactly. Stars are for dorks. No. I continue to be amazed, and I shouldn't be at this point, but Chris Jericho is amazing at hitting the notes that he knows is going to piss off different factions of wrestling fans.
Yep.
And he is the master of the inside the park home run on these things. Cause it's like, okay, I'm going to get the star geeks over here. I'm going to get the people who don't like Ring of Honor over here. I'm going to get the Jay Briscoe fans over here. And then I'm going to get the people who think I'm overexposed over here. And I'm going to do this all in one promo. And then I'm going to end with hi guys and get a pop. And it's just, you're just watching, you go, he's a maestro in so many ways. And it kind of drives you a little bit nuts at the time, but that's also the point. Yeah, I think, no, this is playing on the, I was the first AEW champion and look at the heights I took this company to doing that.
Okay.
I'm going to do, it's a heel be overextending his ability to carry a company, I think. And it's to tweak the fans that didn't like the fact that Chris Jericho was made the first AEW champ. That is my opinion.
I will say that was my first reaction, but then when I saw the Briscoe promo afterwards, I wasn't so sure. So
let me circle back real quick.
Chris Jericho lied, by the way. Dave did not give it 4 stars. He didn't rate it. Oh, he didn't rate it. Unless he did it afterwards, but I just checked the Observer because on Cage Match there was no Dave Meltzer star rating. So Dave probably texted him and told him it was a 4-star match. So anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
Private Party loses the tag titles at Full Gear to Cesaro Claudio and Pac, right?
I was going to mention that earlier. Yeah, and then the Bucks end up getting it back from Claudio.
Yes,
as babyfaces. Yes. Yeah, yes. Or FTR possibly.
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to check in with that. Could I go? No, these guys are transitional champions.
I was going to mention it earlier.
And they're still going to do the turn. It's amazing to me if they do that.
Or someone else suggested the Outrunners would get the match, and then that's where FTR churns on the Outrunners, and then they go after Private Party.
Okay, I'm cool with that too.
Yeah. Right. Video package for Anna Jay and Mariah on Collision. They did show a couple lines from that Mariah made promo in this package. They showed highlights of her career, going all the way back to the, you know, early days pandemic. And then they showed some stardom highlights. She was told she was missing something, not there. She needed to change. And Mariah says, anyone who never gives up was never good enough in the first place. And Anna says, you're not ready for me. That's a great line, by the way, from Mariah. And the whole promo that she cut on Saturday was like, you know, you think you can go to Japan and, you know, you wrestle a couple matches. And, you think you're big. And it's like, no, you're nothing. So, oh, God. Alex Marvez shows up at the Bucks locker room and he wants to get a word with them. Jack Perry interrupts. And then Garcia interrupted them. And then Perry's just laughing and he says, you know, you're next. And Garcia calls him an entitled piece of trash. Says, you think you're special? And then Perry gets in the line. You know, those fans used to dance for me too. And Garcia stops and he actually thinks about it a little bit.
This and, was amazing because Perry just gets right in his head. And he goes, you goof.
Yeah. And then Perry just laughed at him as Garcia walked away. And then he went to the Elite Locker. And they looked like they were packing stuff up. And Excalibur or Tony or somebody said they were shedding
paper. All right. Here we go. They are packing their things.
Yes.
Brandon is shredding documents, and there's boxes of documents all over the locker room.
Okay. I didn't know what the hell they were doing, what they were talking about. Why are they shredding documents?
Until I rewatched it and I went, all right. Is this now more corporate intrigue where the Death Riders now have the files of AEW or something?
Or they're not really EVPs? Like, you know, like
they've been embezzling from the company. What are we doing here?
I don't know. And then the Bucks say to Perry, we got to talk. And then they call him into the room and they block Marvez out. And
look, and that's Jack, this entire AEW thing, Ponzi scheme.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, is these dopes on commentary are making Madoff jokes and stuff.
Because they have no idea what's going on.
They have no idea why he's shredding the documents. That's exactly why. You are correct.
And not only that, I'll bet you anything, there's something Cutler did on his own. I don't think shredding documents has anything to do with the storyline.
No, I think they all should have been packing their bags or something like that, but then that still makes no sense because it's like, why are they so spooked after losing the titles?
Going back to like announcers making things up and stuff, like remember the whole thing about Moxley's benefactor? That's been dropped.
Yes,
because that was something that Excalibur came up with on his own, and then somebody corrected them, and now they're not doing it anymore.
Well, he meant it as a feint, I think. It was like one of those things where it's like, let's talk about somebody possibly being behind this. No, don't. That's dumb. Oh, sorry.
Problem with the private party win following AEW booking patterns, Tony thinks he's done with his job with the title win. Yeah, I could see
pretty
that.
Much. Yeah.
That's what happened to Acclaim. Where are they, by the way? Not on my TV. That's a good thing. Next, we got Camille versus Chris Statlander. Chris Statlander was all dressed up. I have no idea as what.
I thought she was doing Danhausen.
That's what somebody else said, but it could be. I don't know.
but then she like opened her eyes and she had real fangs and stuff like that. And that's lame.
I guess thanks, maybe Chris. Just a vampire. Who knows?
Yes.
And
she had the bat top on last week. So this week she's a vampire.
Right. Yeah. And she even, I think she dressed up on Collision too, or it might have been somebody else. They went through a break. Then Statlander missed a 450 splash, which, by the way, I think every single match in the show, somebody did at least one 450 splash, if not more.
Yes.
Camille hit a running leg guillotine for two. Then she did her torture rack powerbomb for two. Statlander barely kicked out. It got no reaction. Then Camille reversed I wrote down Camille, but it was actually Chris Statlander. Reversed the tombstone for the win. It's pretty easy win. I wrote down Camille is dead. And just to confirm that, Mercedes kicked her to the curb and said, if you want something right, do it yourself. So they've bailed on this Camille-Mercedes thing. I think they made that decision about a month ago, and the last month has just been building to that.
That's unfortunate. I like them as a duo, and I think I think your note is the best note. Mercedes should not be wearing heels around Camille.
There's that. Camille should not be wrestling competitive matches. She should just be winning squashes.
She should just be destroying people.
Yeah. When they set up this whole Statlander thing and it appeared that they were moving towards Statlander and Camille, I thought, well, there's two options. Camille's going to beat her, and then Statlander's going to go down the card, or Statlander's going to beat her, and that's it for Mercedes and Camille. Because you can't have Camille be the massive, unbeatable bodyguard when she just got beat like that by Chris Statlander.
No, she should be as tough and as serious to play off the opposite end of how flaky the CEO character is.
Yes.
And that's what makes a good duo.
And the problem was she just stood around, acted confused, took bumps where she didn't need to.
She should have gotten sunglasses so you can't see her eyes as well, just so that she has that, because she has a great stoic face, but her eyes are so soft to me, that they don't belie the toughness that she is. And it's one of those things where it's like, I almost want her to join this Hurt business as opposed to possibly Mercedes or something.
Just
to get a nice coat of paint on Camille. Cause I like Camille. I do. I think.
Yeah, me too.
I don't think she's a great, she's not, look, I don't need, see, this is also where I think work rate.
Yeah.
Tony or someone's in his ear saying, oh, look at her. She can't work. She can't do the indie stuff where all you need her to be is Big Show or a Giant and just do, or Sid, just do.
Go back and watch how Wardlow got over.
Yes.
You know, like, yeah. I think one of the very first times we saw Camille in an angle was with, Mercedes and Britt setting up that match. And she was taking bumps already back then for Britt Baker.
Yes.
That shouldn't have been happening. So that's over, I'm pretty sure. We got a video package for Hook and Christian, and it all focused on Kip Sabian. And then Christian and his crew did a promo. He says, last week we had a bit of a misunderstanding, so I want to extend an olive branch to Hook. Meet us in the ring next week on Dynamite and allow me to explain myself. And that idiot Hook will show up and get beaten up. No doubt. And no doubt he's leading to Hook versus Christian at Full Gear. So Mark Briscoe with Renee, Kyle O'Reilly, and Ishii. And she says, we know how much that Ring of Honor title meant to you. I'm not doing the Briscoe promo this week. He just said, Renee, you ain't ever lied. That title meant a hell of a lot to me. I can't help myself. When did Chris Jericho bump his head to where he doesn't care about his well-being? The word of the day is instability. You got my brother's name out of your filthy mouth again. The only reason you're on one... The only reason you got one over on us is because you got your guys behind you. Well, I got my guys here. So next week, New Hampshire, Fight Without Honor. Later, ladders, tables, chairs. We're going to beat you in the head with the hatches. Let's go, baby. And then he walks off. Kyle O'Reilly, all happy. And he says something and walks away.
Yes.
Yeah, that was that. So
they're going to lose.
Yeah, probably. Well, maybe not. Maybe Briscoe's going to pin him, and then that's going to set up a rematch.
Okay, we can do that too.
So the Bucks are hightailing out of this arena, and Marvez stopped them, and Daniels is with them, and he questioned why they're leaving. So all of a sudden, Daniels and the Bucks are like buddies. And they said, this place is too chaotic. We're going to change the world, and you and no one else didn't want to listen to us. So from now on, I'm working from home. And Daniels says, we need you. Where are you going? And then they go back to their locker room, they go back to the arena, and Brandon Cutler is trying to follow them, and he's got a box in his hand, and he's, you left your shoes behind. And I wrote down, haha, comedy. And who should show up behind the Death Riders, or behind Cutler, but the Death Riders? They knock the box out of his hand. Daniels tried to help him, so now he's trying to save Brandon Cutler for some reason. And Moxley grabbed Christopher Daniels, and while they beat on him, Marina stole his glasses. And I wrote down, why does Christopher Daniels even care about Cutler? Claudio bashed his hand with a hammer, except he didn't come anywhere near his hand. Cutler screamed like he'd been murdered. Moxley says to him, where are your boys going? Things are just getting good. And then he left with Wheeler and Marina, and Claudio Pack went the other way, interestingly enough. I think that was just a mistake.
there are a few mistakes in this.
Yeah.
Daniels and Bucks as equal EVPs. Meh. Doesn't work. Moxley putting Daniels in a headlock like he's a high school bully instead of just punching him or beating on him a little bit. Because remember, he runs this place.
Yeah.
And then, you know what? We don't need to see the hammer shot on Brandon Cutler to believe it. We can hear it. Yep. I mean, you don't need to try and show because it's not a gimmicked hammer. Unless you're going to get the gimmick hammer and hit him on the hand, you don't need to show it. I mean, you don't even need to show a beatdown of Brandon Cutler. You just need to show the four guys coming out of the thing. And you know what happens? Because there's no emotional resonance in beating up Brandon Cutler. He's a flunky for heels. People
you could have even just done a shot from the Elite dressing room where the Death Riders walked out of the room and the camera looks in there and Cutler's laid out. And that's why the Bucks took off.
Yes.
The Bucks took off and left him to die.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, and
they didn't even help him after he was beat up. They just saw him and they just jetted.
I got another problem with this. Remember what you said earlier about Mark Davis? Like when he first came out,
nobody knew who he was.
How do you think people know who Brandon Cutler is? When's the last time we saw him on TV? I mean,
did you shave his head all of a sudden?
No, I mean, he looks as though.
No. Well, you know, they have the same beard now. Yeah. And they wear the same dumb glasses.
I think he did one angle, I think on Collision or something, where he was arguing with Daniels and he was trying to overrule him, or Daniels overruled him.
Yes, you could have shown Brandon Cutler throughout the show kind of being a gopher, going, hey, I'm helping the EVPs out here tonight.
Blah, or blah, maybe blah. The last couple of weeks, he could have been with them.
Yes, you know, he could have been in the background. You don't even need to interview him. He could just be in the background doing dumb stuff.
Are we going
to
have Michael Nakazawa show up next week and they're going to beat him up and we're going to all know who he is too? Because I think he's actually part of that
group. He'll have a headset on and everything.
And also, no Okada, no Perry. I guess they're still there. I assume, yeah. Bucks are leaving. So the Elite, I think, is done for now. I think when they come back, they're going to have Kenny with them and they're going to be babyfaces.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's exactly. Yeah. And then it's gonna be because I think it's like, we need to talk. That was the breakup speech.
And yeah,
hey guys, been nice. You guys are on your own. We've taught you enough. Talk to you later. Bye.
Perry's gonna be pissed off. Okada's gonna be a baby face in the C2.
Yes.
Defending his belt, saying, calling everybody a bitch. So
and he'll be sacrificed eventually, and that's how the Bucks and Kenny will come back.
Yeah, could be. Kenny's gonna save Okada after Okada murdered him in Winnipeg.
Of course,
because they told me when that happened, oh, this is gonna play out, don't worry. Yeah, I'm sure it is. All right, main event, Swerve and Shelton. So they went to I didn't write down anything from the first part of this match because there was nothing. It didn't matter. They went to break with 3 minutes left, which was notable, and they came back at the top of the hour, so that's when everybody tunes out. So when you see the overrun die tomorrow, you'll know why. So next week they announced we get Cole versus Malakai, which was pretty obvious. We've also got a tag team match, which isn't so obvious and feels kind of early, but Orange Cassidy and Darby Allin against Claudio and Pac. So remember that whole thing with Sting, and how long did it take Sting to wrestle? Was it 18 months?
Yes.
It's going to be 7 days for Darby. So I wrote down Swerve hit a last call in a 450 splash and only got two. Both guys were down, crowds on their feet. Chat in AEW, so I guess they liked the match better than I did. Swerve went to the top. Shelton went for his pop-up superplex, but Swerve reversed it into a powerbomb and hit Swerve Stomp and got the win. Pretty anticlimactic win after all the build-up they did for Shelton. But so for all those people that said, oh, yeah, Shelton, he's on TV, he's getting treated great, blah, 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 he's the exact same as he was in WWE, which is fine. He's getting paid. Good. And that was that. Swerve won. Match is over. Show's done. We're done. Nope. Lights went out. And they came back, or the lights went out. And while the lights were out, Menard thought might be the House of Black coming out. Matt freaking Menard, everybody. I don't know why the lights went out, because they just came back on. Nothing had changed.
I think this was a mistake.
Yeah, I think so too. And then Lashley's music hit, his new music, which the fans didn't recognize, but they knew he was coming. So they popped. And he's in a sweet brown leather suit. Fans are chanting, holy shit. And he got in the ring, and him and Lashley were just staring at each other. And then Shelton tried to get in the middle of them, and that distracted Swerve. So Lashley dropped them. MVP was choking out Nana. Benjamin joined into the beatdown. They gave a choke sign to Swerve. Shelton kicked Nana's head off. Swerve put him in the hurt lock, which they just called the full Nelson. I don't know why. Maybe WWE trademarked that name. That's a great name.
I think they did trademark
it. Okay. Refs came out to break it out. Bunch of security.
It will soon be the Lashley lock, I bet.
No doubt. Here's where we heard 90 seconds.
Yes.
And Benjamin fighting off.
And then later 30 seconds. That was always fun.
Benjamin's fighting off all the security. And this is where Matt Menard said, where's Moxley's crew now? Idiot. That's where we got the number 30 seconds call. And then so real quick, MVP grabs a mic. Guess who's back in business? And the fans chanted. The fans cheered. And I think they're supposed to be heels, but that was a babyface line.
Yes.
Yeah. And that was that. That was the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
The main event was rushed. Which again, I think you could have done some trimming on that Young Bucks segment right before it and given this another 5 minutes, but whatever.
I think the Lashley debut should have been saved to give the Bucks escape more resonance and just have, you know, the Moxley team do something else dastardly.
Like, what's the takeaway from this show?
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to figure out. Yeah. I'm trying to figure
out. And you said that at the very beginning. Yeah.
Should we take away that Bobby Lashley has debuted as a, I mean, they're trying to do two main event stories at once. And I commend them for that. The problem is, which one should I care about more?
Well, and when you talk about main events, I mean, clearly Moxley is main event because he's the world champion. But
yeah, we don't want Swerve to get lost.
Where's Swerve? Where's MJF? Where's Will Ospreay? Right. Where's Takeshita? You know, like, where's Don Callis?
They're trying to have their cake and eat it too a little bit. They're trying to keep everybody important.
And this company is very heel heavy. Yes. All the top people are heels. Who's your top baby face? I guess Will Ospreay, Darby. Yeah. And I guess Orange Cassidy. On the other side, you've got,
all kind of idiots in their own way.
The other side, you got Lashley, you got Moxley, you got MJF, you've got Christian, you've got Takeshita, you got Kyle Fletcher. You know, like Kyle Fletcher, who last week felt like the hottest thing in the world, right now feels like he's, what, seventh on the heel roster? You know, like, and that's not fair because he's the future, but So I would, like I said, Dodgers won.
Yes.
Yeah. Damn it. Thing's over. Oh, well. What was I going to say? I can't remember. Congratulations, Jeff. They are the champions and it's not in a bubble. So
tell Garrett to eat it because
it's a real world championship this time. Did Ohtani play or was he out like when he separated his shoulder there? Oh, okay. Because when he hurt his shoulder.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. What does he normally play in the field?
Sometimes, but he's usually.
Oh, really? DH. Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't really watch a lot of Dodgers game. I follow him. Like, I follow the stats. So I just assumed he was DHing all the time. That was that. Like I said, up until I would say that Bucks get the first one, I was loving this show. And then it just kind of fell off a cliff. And the main event just felt like such an afterthought. And and then Lashley debuting in the overrun to probably 500,000 people. Because I got to think a lot of people are probably watching that game. It looked like a pretty compelling game.
Tuesday's NXT got hurt by this. And I think tonight's game, the thing was the Dodgers started to come back during this last half hour of the show.
I think
it's going to drop like a rock.
And that's on the West Coast feed, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what do you think happens next week? I think NXT wins the head-to-head.
Head-to-head? No. No.
You don't think
so? I think AEW wins on their night.
See, I think you're wrong, but we'll
I think we're creatures of habit. I think people won't realize that NXT
WWE did a much better job of telling people about the new night than AEW did. And
I agree.
And they'll also do a hard court press on Raw telling you about it.
Let me add another thing. NXT does not air live for everybody because of the CW.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Like I can get it live if I use alternative methods, but if not, I have to watch it.
So it airs on KTLA there, right?
Yeah.
So it airs at 7 o'clock your time or 8 o'clock your time?
8 o'clock my time, yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. So that's interesting. Okay. I didn't realize that. I think that Raw is going to probably add some main roster people on the show on Monday and they're going to hammer home that Wednesday. And I think they're going to beat AEW because AEW didn't really, there's hardly anything on that show. And, you know, ECW arena show and all those legends coming back, RVD, Big Bubba, Dawn Marie, Francine, you know, like it's going to be a load of show. Yeah, Nunzio. Hey, Nunzio and Tony D, that's going to be fun. Come on.
Hunter Q Robbins the third. Sure. Why not?
CW Anderson. Oh, no, he's under contract to MLW, I think.
That's true.
Danny Doring and Roadkill.
Pat Tanaka and Paul Diamond.
Lance Storm. If I can be serious. Okay. gets plugged in.
Shake Them Ropes this week. We'll go through everything Halloween Havoc and the follow-up. I thought NXT was a decent show. Plus preview Crown Jewel over in Saudi Arabia. And as I said before, Vader Club this week from Madison Square Garden, only previously on the network and previously on a Shawn Michaels compilation DVD/tape. The Brainbusters versus the Rockers from Madison Square Garden, January 1989. A phenomenal match. That'll drop on your podcatchers later this week.
And I'm at Paul A. Fontaine on Twitter. You can check out my writings. I'm doing
a little bit more of that. We are the world champion, so suck it, everybody. No, go ahead.
On FightGameMedia.com, I got my Match of the Week article. I'm going to be doing a UFC betting article starting this week. And then tomorrow night, as I mentioned earlier in the show, I'll be doing Fight Game Podcast with Garen Gonzalez. We'll be going over 1989 Halloween Havoc. We'll be covering a lot of the same things you just mentioned. You know, recapping the NXT pay-per-view and their TV show and previewing Crown Jewel and previewing the head-to-head battle next week with AEW Dynamite. I will say I thought this TV show yesterday was phenomenal. The pay-per-view was, but I loved that TV show last night.
I agree.
So, yeah. Oh. So, for Uncle Jeff, I've been Grandpa Dez, and this has been The Dynamite Show.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.